Text number 11 is on page 25. We're continuing our reading. Sahasrashirshipurusaha Sahasraksha Sahasrapad Sahasrabhavur Vishvatma Sahasramsa Sahasrasu. The Lord of the mundane world, Mahavishnu, possesses thousands of heads, eyes, hands. Page 25. He is the source of thousands of avatars in his thousands of subjective portions. He is the creator of thousands of individual souls. Purport. Mahavishnu, the object of worship of the hymns of all the Vedas, is possessed of an infinity of senses and potencies, and he is the prime avatar, Purusha, the source of all avatars. So would you like to hear a story about Mahavishnu? Yes? Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Shukadeva Goswami said, "Once, O King, as a group of sages were performing a Vedic sacrifice on the banks of the Saraswati River, a controversy arose among them as to which of the three chief deities is supreme. Eager to resolve this question, O King, the sages sent Lord Brahma's son Bhrigu to answer the question. First, he went to his father's court." Do you mind turning the fan on low? It's kind of muggy in here, isn't it? To test how well Lord Brahma was situated in the mode of goodness, Bhrigu failed to bow down to him or glorify him with prayers. The Lord became angry with him, inflamed into fury by his own passion. Though anger towards his son was now rising within his heart, Lord Brahma was able to subdue it by applying his intelligence in the same way that fire is extinguished by its own product, water. Bhrigu then went to Mount Kailash. There, Lord Shiva stood up and happily came forward to embrace his brother. But Bhrigu refused his embrace, telling him, "You are a deviant heretic." At this, Lord Shiva became angry and his eyes burned ferociously. He raised his trident and was about to kill Bhrigu when Goddess Devi fell at his feet and spoke some words to pacify him. Bhrigu then left that place and went to Vaikuntha, where Lord Janardhan resides. There he went up to the Supreme Lord, who was lying with his head on the lap of his consort, Sri, and kicked him on the chest. The Lord then rose, along with Goddess Lakshmi, as a sign of respect. Coming down from his bedstead, that supreme goal of all pure devotees, bowed his head to the floor before the sage and told him, "Welcome, Brahmana. Please sit in this chair and rest a while. Kindly forgive us, dear master, for not noticing your arrival. Please purify me, my realm, and the realms of the universal rulers devoted to me by giving us the water that has washed your feet. This holy water is indeed what makes all places of pilgrimage sacred. Today, my lord, I have become the exclusive shelter of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. She will consent to reside on my chest because your foot has rid it of all sins." Shukadeva Goswami says, Bhrigu felt satisfied and delighted to hear the solemn words spoken by Lord Vaikuntha. Overwhelmed with devotional ecstasy, he remained silent, his eyes brimming with tears. O King, Bhrigu then returned to the sacrificial arena of the wise Vedic authorities and described his entire experience to them. Amazed upon hearing Bhrigu's account, the sages were freed from all doubts and became convinced that Vishnu is the greatest Lord. From him come peace, fearlessness, the essential principles of religion, detachment with knowledge, the eightfold powers of mystic yoga, and his glorification cleanses the mind of all impurities. He is known as the supreme destination for those who are peaceful and equipoised, the selfless, wise saints who have given up all violence. His most dear form is that of pure goodness, and the Brahmins are his worshipful deities. Persons of keen intellect who have attained spiritual peace worship him without selfish motives. The Lord expands into three kinds of manifest beings, the Rakshasas, the demons, and the demigods, all of whom are created by the Lord's material energy and conditioned by her modes. But among these three modes, It is the mode of goodness which is the means of attaining life's final success. It's which mode to attain the life's final success? Shukadeva Goswami said, the learned Brahmins living along the river Saraswati came to this conclusion in order to dispel the doubts of all people. Thereafter, they rendered devotional service to the Supreme Lord's lotus feet and attained his abode. Sri Suta Goswami said, thus did this fragrant nectar flow from the lotus mount of Shukadeva Goswami, the son of the sage Vyasadeva. This wonderful glorification of the Supreme Person destroys all fear of material existence. A traveler who constantly drinks this nectar through his ear holes will forget the fatigue brought on by wandering along the paths of worldly life. Shukadeva Goswami said, once in Dwarka, a Brahmin's wife gave birth to a son. But the newborn infant died as soon as he touched the ground, O Bharata. The Brahmin took the corpse and placed it at the door of King Ugrasena's court. Then, agitated and lamenting miserably, he spoke the following. The Brahmin said, this duplicitous, greedy enemy of Brahmins, this unqualified ruler addicted to sense pleasure, has caused my son's death by some discrepancies in the execution of his duties. Citizens serving such a wicked king who takes pleasure in violence and cannot control his senses are doomed to suffer poverty and constant misery. The wise Brahmin suffered the same tragedy with his second and third child each time he left the body of the dead son at the king's door and sang the same song of lamentation. When the ninth child died, Arjuna, who was near Lord Keshava, happened to overhear the Brahmin lamenting. Thus Arjuna addressed the Brahmin, what is the matter, my dear Brahmin? Isn't there some lowly member of the royal order here who can at least stand before your house with a bow in his hand? These Kshatriyas are behaving as if they were Brahmins idly engaged in fire sacrifices. The rulers of a kingdom in which Brahmins lament over lost wealth, wives, and children are merely impostors playing the role of kings just to earn their livelihood. Arjuna, my lord, I will protect the progeny of you and your wife who are in such distress. And if I fail to keep this promise, I will enter fire to atone for my sin. The Brahmin said, neither Sankarsana, Vasudeva, Pradyumna, the bestower of bowmen, the best of bowmen, nor the equaled warrior Aniruddha could save my sons. Then why do you naively attempt a feat that the almighty lords of the universe could not perform? We cannot take you seriously. Sri Arjuna said, I am neither Lord Sankarsana, O Brahmin, nor Lord Krishna, nor even Krishna's son. Rather, I am Arjuna, wielder of the Gandiva bow. Do not minimize my ability, which was good enough to satisfy Lord Shiva, O Brahmana. I will bring back your sons, dear master, even if I have to defeat death himself in battle. Thus, convinced by Arjuna, O tormentor of enemies, the Brahmana went home, satisfied by having heard Arjuna's declaration of his prowess. When the wife of the elated Brahmin was again about to give birth, he went to Arjuna in great anxiety and begged him, please, please protect my child from death. After touching pure water, offering obeisances to Lord Maheshwara, and recollecting the mantras for his celestial weapons, Arjuna strung his Gandiva bow. Arjuna fenced in the house where the birth was taking place by shooting arrows attached to various missiles. Thus the son of Pratha constructed a protective cage of arrows covering the house upwards, downwards, and sideways. The Brahmin's wife then gave birth, but after the newborn infant had been crying for a short time, he suddenly vanished into the sky in his self-same body. The Brahmin then derided Arjuna in front of Lord Krishna. Just see how foolish I was to put my faith in the bragging of a eunuch. When neither Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Rama, nor Keshava can save a person, who else can possibly protect him? To hell with that liar, Arjuna. To hell with that braggart's bow. He is so foolish that he has deluded himself into thinking he can bring back a person whom destiny has taken away. While the wise Brahmana continued to heap insults upon him, Arjuna employed a mystic incantation to go at once to Samyamani, the city of heaven where Lord Yamaraj resides. Not seeing the Brahman's child there, Arjuna went to the cities of Agni, Nriti, Soma, Vayu, and Varuna. With weapons at ready, he searched through all the domains of the universe, from the bottom of the subterranean region to the roof of heaven. Finally, not having found the Brahman's son anywhere, Arjuna decided to enter the sacred fire, having failed to keep his promise. But just as he was about to do so, Lord Krishna stopped him and spoke the following words. Lord Krishna said, I will show you the Brahman's sons, so please don't despise yourself like this. These same men who now criticize us will soon establish our spotless fame. Having thus advised Arjuna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead had Arjuna join him on his divine chariot. Together, they set off toward the west. The Lord's chariot passed over the seven islands of the middle universe, each with its ocean and its seven principal mountains. Then it crossed the Lokalok boundary and entered the vast region of total darkness. In that darkness, the chariot's horses, Shaibya, Sugriva, Megapushpa, and Balahaka, lost their way. Seeing in this condition, the best of the Bharatas, Lord Krishna, the supreme master of all masters of yoga, sent his Sudarshan disc before the chariot. That disc shone like thousands of suns. The Lord's Sudarshan disc penetrated the darkness with its blazing effulgence. Racing forward with the speed of the mind, it cut through the fearsome, dense oblivion expanded from primeval matter, as an arrow shot from Lord Ram's bow cuts through his enemy's army. Following the Sudarshan disc, the chariot went beyond the darkness and reached the endless spiritual light of the all-pervasive Brahma Jyoti. As Arjuna beheld this glaring effulgence, his eyes hurt, and so he shut them. From that region, they entered a body of water resplendent with huge waves being churned by a mighty wind. Within that ocean, Arjuna saw an amazing palace more radiant than anything he had ever seen before. Its beauty was enhanced by thousands of ornamental pillars bedecked with brilliant gems. In that palace was the huge, awe-inspiring serpent Anantashesha. He shone brilliantly with the radiance emanating from the gems on his thousands of hoods and reflecting from twice as many fearsome eyes. He resembled white Mount Kailash, and his necks and tongues were dark blue. Arjuna then saw the omnipresent and omnipotent Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, sitting at ease on the serpent bed. His bluish complexion was the color of a dense rain cloud. He wore a beautiful yellow garment. His face looked charming. His broad eyes were most attractive, and he had eight long, handsome arms. His profuse locks of hair were bathed on all sides in the brilliance reflected from the clusters of precious jewels decorating his crown and earrings. He wore the Kastuba gem, the mark of Srivatsa, and a garland of forest flowers. Serving that topmost of all lords were his personal attendants headed by Sunandana Nanda, his chakra and other weapons in their personified forms, his consort potencies, Pushti, Sri, Kirti, and Aja, and all his various mystic powers. Lord Krishna offered homage to himself in this boundless form, and Arjuna, astonished at the sight of Lord Mahavishnu, bowed down as well. Then, as the two of them stood before him with joined palms, the Almighty Mahavishnu, Supreme Master of all rulers of the universe, smiled and spoke to them in a voice full of solemn authority. Purport. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur makes the following observations on this verse. Just as Lord Krishna offered obeisances to his own deity during the worship of Govardhan Hill, so now also he paid homage to his Vishnu expansion for the purpose of playing out his pastimes. The Lord is Ananta, possessed of countless manifestations, and this eight-armed form is among them. He is Achyuta, never falling from his position. in the sense that he never stops engaging in his human-like pastimes as a cowherd boy of Vrindavan. Thus, to safeguard the special sanctity of his human-like pastimes as Krishna, he had offered obeisances to his own plenary expansion. Lord Mahavishnu appeared before Krishna and Arjuna as Abhuma, the supremely opulent one, and as Parameshtinam Prabhu, the Lord of the multitudes of Brahmas ruling over millions of universes. With solemn authority, he spoke in such a way as to bewilder Arjuna, in obedience to Sri Krishna's intention. His smile hinted at his private thoughts, which Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur revealed for our benefit. You want to hear Lord Krishna's private thoughts? Krishna, my dear Krishna, excuse me, it's Mahavishnu. My dear Krishna, by your desire, I will describe my superiority, even though I am your expansion. At the same time, however, I will subtly imply in my statements the supreme position of your beauty, character, and power, and the fact that you are the source from which I emanate. Just see how clever I am, that in front of Arjuna, I am confidently divulging my true identity as non-different from you. Text 58. Lord Mahavishnu said, I brought the Brahmin sons here because I wanted to see the two of you, my expansions, who have descended to the earth to save the principles of religion. As soon as you finish killing the demons who burden the earth, quickly come back here to me. Purport. As explained by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the secret import of these words spoken for Arjuna's edification are as follows. You two, who have descended along with your kalas, your personal energies, should kindly return to me after killing the demons who burden the earth. Please quickly send these demons here to me for the sake of their liberation. It is stated in the Sri Harivamsa and in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that the path of gradual liberation passes through the intermediate station of Lord Mahavishnu's abode outside the eighth shell of the universe. Text 59. Although all your desires are completely fulfilled, O best of exalted personalities, for the benefit of the people in general, you should continue to exemplify religious behavior as the sages Nara and Narayan. Thus instructed by the Supreme Lord of the topmost planet, Krishna and Arjuna assented by chanting Om. And then they bowed down to Almighty Lord Mahavishnu. Taking the Brahmin sons with them, they returned with great delight to Dwarka by the same path along which they had come. They presented the Brahmin with his sons, who were in the same infant bodies in which they had been lost. Having seen the domain of Lord Vishnu, Arjuna was totally amazed. He concluded that whatever extraordinary power a person exhibits can only be a manifestation of Sri Krishna's mercy. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes Arjuna's amazement. He thought, just see, even though I'm a mere mortal, by Krishna's mercy, I have seen the Supreme Godhead, the root cause of everything. Then, after a moment, he thought again, but why did Lord Vishnu say that he took away the Brahmin's children out of a desire to see Krishna? Why would the Supreme Personality of Godhead hanker to see his own expansion? This might be the effect of some peculiar temporary circumstance, but since he said didrikshuna instead of didrikshata, where the specific suffix shuna carries the sense of a permanent characteristic, not a temporary one, it has to be concluded that he has always been wanting to see Krishna and myself. Even granted that this is so, why couldn't he simply see Krishna at Dwarka? After all, Lord Mahavishnu is the all-pervading creator of the universe, which he holds like an amalaka fruit in his hand. Is it that he could not see Krishna in Dwarka because Krishna does not allow anyone to see him without his special sanction? And why also would Lord Mahavishnu, the compassionate master of all Brahmins, have a repeatedly tormented and elevated Brahmin year after year? He must have acted in this unusual way only because he could not give up his extreme eagerness to see Krishna. All right, he may have acted improperly for that reason, But why couldn't he have sent a servant to kidnap the Brahmin's sons? Why did he himself have to come to Dwarka? Was stealing them out of Lord Krishna's capital so difficult that no one but Lord Vishnu could hope to accomplish it? I can understand that he intended to cause so much distress to a Brahmin of Lord Krishna's city that Krishna would be unable to tolerate it. Then he would grant Lord Vishnu his audience. Lord Vishnu inspired the distressed Brahmin to pour out his complaints to Krishna in person. Thus it is clear that Sri Krishna's status of Godhead is superior to Lord Mahavishnu's. Having thought in this way, Arjuna was totally amazed. He asked Lord Krishna whether these were actually the facts of the matter, and the Lord replied, as related in the Harivamsa, Mat darshanartam te bala ritastena mahatmana viprartam ishyate krishno mat samipan nachanyata. It was to see me that he, the supreme soul, stole the children. He believed, only on a Brahmin's behalf will Krishna come to see me, not otherwise. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur states that Lord Krishna further told Arjuna, I did not go there, however, for the Brahmin's sake. I went there, my friend, just to save your life. If it had been for the Brahmin's sake that I traveled to Vaikuntha, I would have done so after his first child was abducted. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, although this pastime occurred before the battle of Kurukshetra, it is recounted here at the end of the 10th canto under the general heading of the supremacy of Lord Krishna's glories. Lord Krishna exhibited many other similar heroic pastimes in this world. He apparently enjoyed the pleasures of ordinary human life, and he performed greatly potent fire sacrifices. The Lord, having demonstrated his supremacy, at suitable times, he showered down all desirable things upon the Brahmins and his other subjects, just as Indra pours down his rain. Now that he had killed many wicked kings and engaged devotees such as Arjuna in killing others, the Lord could easily assure the execution of religious principles through the agency of such pious rulers as Yudhisthira. Goprimanande Hari Hari Bo.